Welcome to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet and why. There have been a number of service degradation incidents over the last couple of weeks, one involving Salesforce that was attributed to an issue on their backend involving DNS. There was another where there was a brief spike in packet loss within Cloudflare's network. But we're not going to focus on those today. If you have questions about those or want to know what we saw, feel free to reach out to us. But we're going to focus today on two incidents involving DNS providers. There seems to have been an increase in DNS incidents over the last couple of weeks. In the case of what we're going to deep dive on, one of them is involving an authoritative DNS provider. So this was a Neustar. And the other involved a public recursive resolver service called Quad9. So we're going to go a little bit deeper on those, and in particular talk about the service issue involving Neustar's Ultra DNS service. And to do that, we're joined by Kamal. Kamal is one of our engineers here, and he's going to get into the nitty-gritty on all of the interesting details around BGP and some of the characteristics of the incident that we saw. So Kamal, welcome.
Thank you, Angelique. It's awesome to be back to the Internet Report. Looks like the internet events are on the roll, so it's awesome to be here again. Looking forward to diving into this one.
Awesome. All right, so let's get started with just sharing what we were able to see and sort of walking through some of the characteristics of this particular event. So this incident happened on May 6th that started around 1710 UTC, which is 10 a.m. Pacific time, and it lasted for almost 4 hours. So let's go ahead and get that up on the screen, and we can start walking through what we were able to see as a result.
So what we are looking at here is DNS server test, which is one of the types of the tests that we support within the 1000 Eyes. As you can see here, we had almost 4 hour long event that reflected in degraded availability for the target that's listed here. And you can clearly see that it was working as it should be, as part of which availability was 100% until we hit the 6th of May, 520 UTC, as part of which degradation is clearly visible. It went until 2040 UTC on the same day. So it's very long, prolonged event. And if we navigate to path visualization, we will see that there is a clear correlation between observed packet loss from various agents that were executing this test, as visible on the left-hand side, those green and red circles, towards the target itself. We see that average loss here amounts to somewhere around 70 to 80%. But if we zoom into this, some of the agents such as Ashburn VA in Charter, you can see that loss was hitting even 100%.
Right. So it looks like certain particular locations like Ashburn, and maybe if we take a look at Amsterdam as well, these are locations where there's very dense peering, those seem to have been impacted a great deal more than some other locations. The other interesting thing about this packet loss is that when it starts, it's not, you know, there's a very kind of very dramatic point in spike at a particular point in time, right? So we see on the left-hand side, there's some packet loss, and then we see a very significant increase here. And what's also interesting about this, if we drop down into the BGP route visualization layer, we can see that that corresponds with some path changes for this particular prefix.
That's correct. So if we zoom into the BGP route visualization, we can see how ASNs were changing as part of these path changes. So the metric that we are currently seeing are path changes, and they are closely related, obviously, to updates themselves, right? So updates usually result in path changes. If we hover over path changes, and at the time when the issue starts at 5:15 UTC on 6th of May, we can clearly see that prefix 156, 154, 153.0/24 is being advertised to various new stars essence. And it's actually quite interesting to see this kind of topology shown up here, because it kind of reveals certain intra workings of the new start network and how they treat BGP events themselves. Then we can see their big upstream ASN 12008 advertising prefixes towards the rest of the network. And we can see here clearly that Limelight Networks ASN 22822 is getting into the picture, right?
Right. So we're looking at, you know, we effectively have 10 ASs that are advertising the same prefix. So why would that be? I mean, is there any advantage to doing that over just having, you know, this is an Anycast service. Is there any advantage to doing that over just having a single AS advertising? Because Anycast is really designed to effectively optimize, or give the shortest path to users wherever they're located. So why would they be doing this?
So if you look at this, you will see that all of these ASNs, even though they are different origin, they belong to Neustar itself, right? So they are those are their own ASNs. So what's happening here likely is that they are trying to control how they do traffic engineering depending on different circumstances. So for it's not unusual for companies to do so. So I know that certain big social network companies do this based on traffic engineering, based on traffic utilization. So they extrapolate information from NetFlow. They figure out who the top offenders are. And what they tend to do then is that based on the server utilization in the POP itself, such as those that we can see here, so Dallas, Ashburn, Los Angeles, and others, they tend to move excess traffic from one hub to the other one. And if you look at this here, if we zoom over the Amsterdam 2 agent and we click view details of path changes, you can see that something pretty similar to that was happening here. And it's safe to say that this was happening in automatic fashion. So some sort of network automation was at play here. So you can see here that originally this prefix was advertised by the ASN 397238. However, we can see that within the 2 minute span, so from 5:26:11 UTC to 5:28:56 UTC, that origin ASN changed multiple times. So yeah, it's kind of unreasonable to expect that this was manual change. I believe that they were potentially measuring utilization of the POPs or utilization of the transit interfaces towards these hubs, and they were making that the software was making decisions on where to move the traffic based on certain criteria.
Right. So it's likely that those path changes were just triggered, and then the in some fashion, and then you know we see the path change result. And again, just to drill into, you know, why they would have multiple ASNs, you know, BGP can sometimes be hard to control for in terms of, you know, how you optimize how users connect to your service. And if you have multiple ASNs, you can make more granular changes or changes just for a particular AS without impacting all of the others. So it gives them, you know, potentially one of the reasons why they're doing this is to give them more control over BGP.
Exactly right. And the thing is, like, we know that tightly controlled ASN path is something that everyone strives to. So the shorter the ASN path, the better it gets. So, you know, in some sort, this looks like any cost, even though the ASNs are different, but gives them more granularity in how they perform changes and how they control the traffic. So that seems to be happening here. Right. It's also very symptomatic to see that if you look at the path visualization here, you will observe that loss happens at the same, starts at the same time when obviously we observed DNS availability going down. So DNS availability here is a direct effect of the spike in packet loss, and timeline actually matches. And then at the same time, we can see that BGP path visualization had some changes at approximately the same time, which means that all of these events are directly related.
Right, and if you move forward, we can see that there's this point in time in which there's a very significant increase in the number of path changes. And it's a pretty dramatic change.
Yes, it looks like at certain time, NuSTAR flipped over from 12,008 towards the 19905 ASN. And based on some research that we did offline, it looks like this could be a DDoS scrubbing ASN for the company. I know that they are providing this service commercially, so this could be what's at play here.
What's interesting too, in terms of this peering change, is that this particular ASN has a different set of peers than the previous ASN that they were using. And this ASN is front-ended by Limelight and a couple of other service providers as well, but predominantly most of the routes are going through Limelight.
Exactly right. So if we navigate to path visualization to observe how this traffic was going from the source agents on the left-hand side towards the prefix on the right-hand side, if we click here and we select Limelight networks, we will observe the hops that were within the Limelight networks. So here we can see that these three particular agents on the left-hand side were sharing this particular hop, of which is hosted within the Limelight network.
Right, and this is at a point when though big change that they made from a routing standpoint was still getting propagated. But if you move forward just a little bit in the timeline to look at the packet loss, we can see that if we start looking at the Limelight nodes, we see a slightly different characteristic to those nodes. So the Limelight nodes now, the host names are siteprotect.security.nustar. So it looks like there's, again, some difference between the how traffic was flowing through Limelight before they made this routing change versus after. And again, this is simply based on what we've seen in the past in terms of DDoS attacks. It looks like maybe this was some mitigation kind of activity that they were doing. Again, we don't know what the actual root cause of this incident was. This DNS provider hasn't issued a statement about it, but just based on what we've seen in the past, this does bear a lot of the characteristics of a DDoS attack.
Exactly. And what we can see here on the path is that during these initial stages of the change, to your point, Angelique, earlier on, the loss wasn't that expressed, so to say. But then we can see that agents such as Amsterdam or agents in Ashburn, which are known to be quite big peering locations, started exhibiting very severe packet loss, going up to 98%, which means that even though there was a DDoS at mitigation or scrubbing in the effect, that the effect that customers could potentially experience themselves during those 4 hours of event itself.
And we'll talk a little bit a bit later in the show about what the potential impact of this incident was. But just as a point of comparison, we do know that another DNS provider, in this case, Quad9, which is a public recursive resolver, it's not a commercial service, they also reported a incident 3 days before this event. In their case, they acknowledged that was due to a DDoS attack. They wrote a very detailed blog on what happened and the steps that they're taking to prevent something like that from occurring in the future. If we just take a very quick peek at that, we won't go into into detail on it, but we can see here that the incident started around 6:16:15, so around 10:15 a.m., and then went to about 17:40. So didn't last as long. It was not as significant an issue, it seems, but you know, we can see its impact on availability, and we can also see, for example, if we look at the network layer, that correlation to see that really significant spike in packet loss across a variety of different provider partners as traffic made its way to its service. So we'll put a link to the blog on that in the show notes if you want to check that out. So that was a little bit of an overview of these two incidents. You know, we're going to talk in a moment to someone on our team, Michael Batchelder, about DNS a little bit more and about, you know, the different layers of resilience that are built in and also what the potential impact was of the Neustar DNS incident.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right, well, joining us today to talk about DDoS attacks as well as the DNS is our own in-house DNS geek, Michael Batchelder, also affectionately known as Binky. So Binky, welcome.
Hi, Angela, good to be with you.
Great, so we talked a little bit about this incident involving Neustar. We talked about the DDoS attack involving Quad9. Now, there's obviously different types of DDoS attacks. So why don't we just talk a little bit about, you know, what those look like and some of the different types of DDoS attacks?
Sure. So in a basic DDoS attack, essentially you have two systems. You have your attacking systems and your targets. The attacking systems usually comprise a botnet, which consists of computers distributed globally, and they've been hacked with botnet software, allowing them to be controlled remotely by the attacking party for the purpose of launching attacks on the targets. And the targets are networks or servers of some type, typically critical or high-profile services. It might be websites like SaaS apps, Gmail, Office 365, those kinds of things. Or they might be infrastructure like networks, CDN providers, or, as we're going to discuss, the DNS system itself. But essentially, the botnets are going to send traffic directly to the targets, and the denial effect is achieved either through a vulnerability in the target, you know, there's some bug in the software that causes crashes, or you achieve the effect of denial through sheer volume, just throwing the traffic.
So two entities involved at that point. Now there's also this style of DDoS attack, I believe it's termed amplification attacks. So what do those involve?
Sure. So you can improve your DDoS attack if you're an attacker by adding this third system called an amplifier. And so now your traffic is from your botnet to your amplifier, and then from the amplifier to the target. And the way it works is through normal or abnormal operation, the amplifier is going to multiply the botnet's traffic. So more and or larger packets, essentially. And we can talk about an amplification factor of that traffic. In an amplifier attack, you can see amplification factors of 10x, 100x, maybe even 1000x if you find a really effective type of amplification attack.
So there's also this sort of subset of amplification DDoS attack called an NSNX attack that's really specific to the DNS. So what is that?
Right. So sometimes, again, it's just volume of traffic, but sometimes you can find very specific types of attacks that are specific to the type of target being attacked, like a DNS server. So this NSNX attack is one of those. It's a way of using the DNS protocol's own functionality, normal functionality, normal operation, to generate the multiplied attacking traffic. Now, the details of the attack are a bit geeky from the DNS perspective, but what I would encourage people to do who are interested in the details is go to nxnsattack.com and see the details of the attack. This is a website that was created last year when the attack was announced by three academic researchers in computer science. We haven't really seen the attack in the wild as far as I'm aware of.
Right.
But if you want to look at the details, this is the place to go to understand them.
Yeah, and that's more just for folks to kind of, understand the inner workings of that. There's no evidence that that was, in any way involved in either incidents. In fact, Quad9 explicitly talked about the attack on them, and it wasn't that type of attack. It was kind of your garden variety amplification attack. All right. So in terms of the DNS, I mean, one of the things that we looked at was just in the case of Neustar, their authoritative DNS service itself had some service degradation. Now, that's just authoritative. I mean, users don't directly, us, right? Like when we go to sites, for example, like we're not directly interacting with the authoritative servers. We will have some resolver that is sort of an intermediary between, whether that's local or public resolver, between us and the authoritative server. So kind of, walk us through kind of how the DNS works and what the potential impact of this, these two incidents could have, or actually I would just say the Neustar incident could have been.
Sure. So as you mentioned, the way that end users interact with DNS, our laptops are configured with a recursive resolver, and there are public recursive resolver services like Google DNS, people may be familiar with, which is 8.8.8.8, their IP address, and Quad9, which you mentioned, which is 9.9.9.9. So your average laptop is configured with one of these DNS public resolvers, let's say, and you send your queries to them. They in turn speak to the authoritative name servers for the domains that need to be resolved. And everybody has, authoritative name servers who has a domain.
Right.
So as you mentioned, Quad9 was the subject of a sort of garden variety DDoS attack, they think, where the amplification mechanism, they have a really good blog post at quad9.net, quad9.net, and they discuss the details, but they mentioned that they think the amplifier was publicly accessible LDAP servers. And so the blog post discusses how that was used to direct a volume of traffic at Quad9 servers.
Right. So what about the Ultra DNS service?
Sure. So Ultra DNS provides authoritative DNS. Again, that's something that everyone with the domain has. And what we saw in our 1000eyes data was that a large number of authoritative name servers in Ultra DNS service were impacted by this event. And it's possible that this could have been an example of NXNS attack. Maybe it wasn't. But what's interesting is that we see a very broad spectrum of servers, a large number of different servers, different domain names, different IP addresses affected in this outage. And NXNS attack is the kind of attack that would allow an attacker to distribute their traffic across a wide swath of authoritative name servers. So maybe a little bit of a question as to what might have happened here. But one thing that this does show us in a way is the resilience of the DNS, because even though a wide swath of authoritative name servers were affected, we don't see the ultimate service that relies on these servers affected quite so much.
Right. So, I mean, we have seen it in some instances, but it varied. It varied by a number of factors. And if we just use ourselves as an example, so Thousand Eyes domain is hosted by Neustar as well as by Route 53, AWS's DNS service. So, you know, if we look, for example, at how our just the querying of our A record was impacted, we can see that, you know, for the records that were hosted with Ultra DNS, we have availability issues.
Right. So I can show you a share link if you're interested in taking a look at that.
All right. So we're looking here at a DNS test. And in this test, we are querying for the NS record of thousandeyes.com. And we can see here that at the same time as the incident with Ultra DNS, as we looked at earlier, we see a dip in availability across the board. Now, we're testing to not just the Ultra DNS servers that are hosting our record, but also AWS DNS as well. So that's one of the reasons why the availability isn't as severe as we saw in the exclusive Ultra DNS service incident we looked at earlier. So we see that dip in availability, and if we just, for example, look at Ultra DNS, it's a little bit more severe. In the case of AWS, we see 100% availability. So, you know, we were clearly, you know, if we just look purely at this DNS test, it looks like we potentially would have been impacted, and anybody trying to reach thousandeyes.com could potentially have had an issue. But if we look at a test, or effectively what users would have seen from these various locations around the globe, you know, we were not seeing any impact to our service. So we see availability is at 100%. So, you know, that's interesting example here, because we have two DNS providers. Right? And so because of how DNS works, that effectively shielded us from any impact as a result of this incident.
Right. So this testifies to the resilience of the DNS, actually. Despite being architected decades ago, the architecture is quite resilient to these types of attacks. So you mentioned a couple different ways in which that resilience is exhibited. For one, DNS records are cached. So the authoritative name servers that contain the thousandeyes.com records, those records are cached throughout the world on recursive name servers caches, servers like the Google DNS, Quad9 DNS, you know, a corporate name server, an ISP name server, and so forth. But the caching helps the resilience, because in the case of the DNS test that you showed, where you're requesting our NS records, the records of our name servers, those records typically last days in cache, 1 or 2 days in cache, whereas the DDoS attacks last a matter of maybe an hour or a few hours. So the caching helps the resilience tremendously. And then you mentioned having multiple providers allows you further resilience, so that if one set of providers' authoritative DNS servers is impacted, you'll see that the other set of servers kind of takes over. And this happens because the recursive DNS servers that are talking to the authoritative DNS servers, those recursive servers can detect that one set of authoritative servers are performing poorly, and switch to querying only the more active, more capable authoritative name servers.
Right. So, you know, that speaks to, especially since DNS is such a critical step in reaching a site, that, you know, you need to architect for resilience. Having two DNS providers is certainly a way to shield yourself from issues if, for example, one of your providers has an issue. And we know, of course, that no provider is immune to issues. AWS's Route 53 service, for example, was impacted a few years ago by a BGP hijack. So it doesn't really matter who you are. This just happens. Like, stuff happens. So it's important to kind of think about resilience of your service from a number of different angles, including from a standpoint of DNS.
We've seen all manner of DNS providers suffer attacks. There's some very famous ones. The DNS server, DNS provider Dyn, D-Y-N, was the subject of a very famous attack that subsequently brought down a great many services across the internet. So obviously, engineer for resiliency as much as possible.
All right, so that concludes our show. Binky, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. And if any of our listeners want to discuss the details of any of what we've discussed, such as the NXNS attack or how you make your DNS service more resilient, I'm happy to be available. People can reach me at binky@thousandeyes.com.
Great. And also, if any listeners have any general questions about the show or want to suggest topics for the future, you can reach us at internetreport@thousandeyes.com. And we also have a free t-shirt if you subscribe to the show. So go ahead and do that and send us your address and your t-shirt size, and we'll be sure to get that over to you. So until next time.